Hello and welcome. I'm Jim.
I'm Rich.
Let's try that again.
I like it. Keep it going.
Welcome to show number 25, recorded on December 1st, 2013. Here on Rich's Random Podcast Generator, we cover just about anything we want, from group hangout conversations to tech product reviews to interesting interviews. All tech, all the time, all posted at theaverageguy.tv. You can contact me or the show. Just send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. You can also send it to jim@theaverageguy.tv. That seems to be a little more popular these days. I think you guys can remember that. Or follow the show schedule on our Twitter account, @theaverageguy.tv. If you're new to podcasts and you're looking for an easy way to listen each week, we have been recommending Stitcher out there, stitcher.com, available for both Android and iPhone platforms. A great way to listen to podcasts both at home and on the road. And if you have a new car, you might even have Stitcher preloaded on your audio components there in the car. Of course, this show and all the past shows are on Stitcher, stitcher.com. Search Rich's Random. I just checked that before the show. It's still working. That's good. It's education for your ears. And we have all the links to automatically listen to, download, subscribe to this podcast and all the other ones on iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, many of the other podcatcher applications available right on the front page of theaverageguy.tv. So head out there, take a peek at those, and get us subscribed. If you find us out in the social space, YouTube, iTunes, Google Plus, or Facebook, you can give us a plus one, a like, a vote, a up, a thumbs up, or whatever. Give us one of those. Those are always nice as well. All right, December 1st. I can't believe we are here in December, guys. Rich, welcome to your own podcast. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. It's been a while. Boy, there's a lot of news going on and a lot of things that I want to talk about, and I'm not sure which ones we'll be able to get to, but I remember from our last podcast on home tech, I was talking with Kevin at the end of the show, and I said, you know what, we got to get Kevin on the show. So, Kevin, how you doing today? Kevin Spoonover.
Doing great. Glad to be here. Look forward to some lively conversation.
Yes, the man who has all of the new egg deals of the day.
He is the deal guy. In pre-show, Rich asked him, you know, if his fingertips were on fire. So, you know, you never know.
What do you want to talk about, guys? What do you want to talk about first?
Let's talk a little bit. I know the thing we put in the event was OCZ, but let's save that for a second. I do want to talk about Black Friday, Cyber Monday, because there's a lot of things going on with that. And we've been putting a lot of links out there. I guess, Kevin, one of the questions I want to ask you, well, you just recently went shopping, right? And you came back with some flash drives. Why don't you give us the array of flash drives that you have there?
Sure. But, and, you know, Black Friday kind of runs into, there's those doorbuster deals where you've got to be a crazy guy and stand in line all night and do those kind of deals. But one of the things I always tell people, I usually don't get there till afternoon and the crowds are gone. And pre-show we were talking, you know, I'm at my relative's over in western Wisconsin. Probably the only big store nearby other than a Walmart is an Office Max. But Office Max, Staples, Office Depot, those guys always have great deals on flash drives. So I'll see if I can find all of them here. I did go a little nuts. The 128 gigs were $43. The 64 gigs were $24 and $21, I believe. If you've never used these MTech drives, this is like the old BASF company. So a 64 gig from those guys was $21.99. And kind of my throwaway drives, you know, these 8 giggers now, they were blowing these up for $3.99 a piece.
Oh, man. And what are you still putting on those? I mean, I haven't used a flash drive in forever, partly because at work we block the USB ports on the laptop. So you can't do that, right? But so I haven't used them in a while. But what are you using them for?
So the bigger ones I almost always end up giving away to people who tell me they've never backed up their PC or laptop, and I look at them and say, just take this and go back it up. 8 gigs and 4 gigs and maybe 16 gigs, I load a lot of ISO images on them, especially working in the lab. You can boot off them very easily. You can load firmware off them very easily. So seems like 8s and 4s, I tend to hover in that kind of area. So That was probably my big grabs of the day. There were several good tablet deals out there, too. Target had the Nook 7-inch for $79. There was a tablet that didn't get advertised very much, and when I did pop into Walmart yesterday afternoon, they still had them. HP and Intel put out a 7-inch Android tablet for $89. You know, pretty basic, 8 gig with a SD slot, but still decent screen on it. And, you know, instead of the, as we talked about in the last Average Guy show I was on, instead of paying $50 or $70 for a crappy no-name tablet, for $89 you could get a decent tablet with Google Play and everything on it. So lots of good stuff from that point of view.
About half the price of maybe of getting a Samsung of the same size, right? A Samsung.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Samsung Tab 7, I think those are 179 or something like that.
Yeah, they tend to 179, 150 in sales these days. So
right.
Those are holding in there well.
Well, it's an interesting... the timing has totally changed on this Black Friday weekend here, at least in the United States. And if you're listening to this, which good chance you could be listening at this outside of the United States, Black Friday is our biggest shopping day of the year. Traditionally, it was the day after Thanksgiving, and stores opened. I think they way back in the day, they used to open at a reasonable time, right? And then it got earlier and earlier and earlier, and then it started shifting into Thursday, and now they're opening earlier and earlier and earlier Thursday. But it really starts, Rich, and don't you think this starts at about 6 p.m. on Thursday and runs all the way to Christmas? If there's no more, like, big, I mean, people are running deals. I saw Best Buy today that extended their deal. Yeah. They're $199, you know, doorbuster blowout. And this is what's happening a lot, I think, too, is that these guys are offering these doorbuster deals. And then they end up keeping it all month, right? It's not necessarily a one day only. A $199 Surface RT. It's at Vail at Best Buy. They said till Monday. We'll have to see. But, Rich, don't you think it's getting farther and farther?
Anything anymore, does it, Black Friday? I mean, it means a whole month, right? Or it means at least 3 or 4 days now, technically. And we got Cyber Monday, which is what? Black Friday on Monday. So, I guess it's good for consumers, you know. We all get some good pricing around the holidays, so we can buy up all of that stuff that we are going to yell at our kids later, you know, for not putting away. So,
Kevin, you do a lot of shopping. Are the deals really that good on Friday and, you know, this weekend as opposed to any other time? I mean, you're always putting out deals. So, I mean, does it really get that much better?
My observation of Black Friday is the doorbusters are the best price deals, and those are the limited quantity things. There's only a handful of them. It's the wait in line kind of stuff. Otherwise, I think you gotta, you know, and it's kind of one of my first bullet points of discussion today is, you know, whether it's a, you know, whatever technology device you're going to buy, just take a deep breath, take a step back, and I've always, you know, people will ask me, hey, when's the best time to buy electronics? And my answer is kind of a smart aleck answer, but the reality is, it's a good time to buy when you can look at yourself in the mirror and know there's a better deal out there, because the minute you buy it, there's going to be a better deal the next day. So the Black Friday thing got really wacky this year because last Monday, Best Buy and Walmart got into kind of a shoving match, and they started kicking off some of their Black Friday stuff last Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So to Rich's point, I don't think it really means a lot anymore. It just the event of Black Friday is where they kind of blow out some of the you know, the bigger opportunities and the real big deals, so to say.
Yeah, I've been looking at the Newegg flyers, and you know, I'm not really seeing anything. Yeah, there's some like your doorbusters, I guess, but I'm not really seeing anything that's spectacular. You know, not beyond any of the regular email notifications, Newegg email notifications. So, but you know, hey, you know, you see something you like, and who knows? You might now look. I bought a new motherboard about 12 days ago. It went on sale on Monday, and to Newegg's credit, I hit them up and I says, hey, you got a 14-day match policy, price match policy? And they says, yeah, you're right, we do. So here's $25. You know, here's a certificate for $25 of credit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I like shopping on Newegg. They always treat me right. If I have a problem, I've never been denied an RMA, and it's always been pretty quick and pretty easy to take care of. So,
you know. Yeah, they end up being one of my favorites. Just like you say, the business practices are good, and
yep.
You know, that's been one of my rantings lately. I tend to buy a lot of things pre-order if a new technology is coming out. I don't get too crabby about paying. You know, you always end up paying full bump for pre-order.
Yeah, yeah.
The Dell Venue tablet I got, love it. It's a great 8-inch Windows-based tablet, but Dell needs to figure out that when you pre-order something, the expectation is you would actually have it before you could just go buy it in the store.
Oh, no.
and that's been one where, that saga... You know, that was about a week to 10 days they were at Walmart, and I finally got mine, and the week after I got mine, they were already discounting them. So, you know, mm-hmm. it's just, you know, I notice a lot of vendors don't do pre-order, and I'm fine with not doing pre-order, but if you're going to do pre-order, you know, really do pre-order and do it right.
Yeah, make it enticing for your customers, you know. I mean, they're your loyal customers, they're your beta testers of sorts, I suppose. So take care of them for sure. What about you, Jim? Did you buy anything this weekend? Did you snap up anything? Didn't you buy like even a malware bytes for like some kind of?
Oh, you know, I did that with you. Yes, actually, I did. It was I'm not sure it was a Black Friday deal, but my wife got a new laptop, and so I was setting it up this weekend for her and wanted to put some just a kind of antivirus on it. Mm-hmm. And found a malware bytes deal for $15 on Amazon. I've done a lot of buying. I'm not sure it's been Black Friday. You know, traditionally that's for Christmas, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so that's not considered a Christmas present. Antivirus is not a Christmas present for sure. So I didn't. You know, but there were some deals out there. I got that $15. You know, downloaded it. It took them about an hour or two to get the license key to me to put it in.
Same here.
Odd. Yeah.
Same here. Yeah,
which was odd, Kevin. That's another weird thing. Sometimes it's like, you know, it's a downloadable license key. It should just come with the invoice when you're done. You know, it's not like somebody's back there typing that thing in.
No, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm tracking the order. It says, okay, you know, verification, and it sits at verification for an hour, and then it goes packaging. Packaging what?
I know.
You know, send me the email. What?
Some guy in a back room, looking on a sheet of paper. Okay, here's the next license key. You know, I'm going to put that thing in for this guy. So I also bought some. We talked about this at the Facebook group. So if you go to theaverageguy.tv/Facebook, I did purchase some of these. And John Stutzman just happened to have a video post ready talking about these.
Oh, my God. I have about five of those.
These things are awesome.
Yeah, they're awesome. That's right.
They're $15, and they take your 2.5 to a 3.5. The best thing is they fit just like a regular hard drive. You know how sometimes you get those
right.
supposed to fit kind of things, you actually go to try it, and the screw holes aren't in the right spot.
And the second best thing is that they protect these little weak little SATA tabs and connectors and the power connectors on your SSDs, because those are pretty wobbly. Pretty vulnerable to being bumped around inside your case if you're in there a lot. So,
well, David sent me home with a Synology box from the meetup, and I'd thrown some two hard drives in there, and then needed to yank those out for something else I was doing, so the Synology was down. And I got a stack of laptop drives for whatever reason, right? I've had friends drop off laptops to get fixed, and they're broken, and they're like, we'll just keep it and recycle it. So you keep the drive, right? So I got this stack of 2.5s, and I'm thinking, okay, I'll just go get some converters, and it's worked like a charm. Kevin, I cut you off. What were you going to say?
No, I just have to wonder from time to time with those adapters that don't quite fit, how many servers and Synology and QNAP boxes are out there with broken backplanes from, you know, folks thinking, you know, hey, this is my mounting bracket. They put it in there and go to engage it, and that snap, snap sound.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they went in.
That would be a bad feeling.
On the Synology, I have a 712 Plus, and these two, it's two drives, and I just snapped them out, put the drives right in the tray, screwed them in with the screws provided.
All right.
slid it right back in and locked it in. And it couldn't have been easier.
I'm going to slide this one out right here. Hopefully it's not my OS drive. Oh, good. I just pull that out of my drive case sitting in the front.
It's a $15 deal. I mean, I think every IT guy probably needs to have a handful of these laying around.
It doesn't affect reads or writes. It just pretty much is a little circuit board there, but it's pretty much a straight through.
So that was my Black Friday find. Although I ordered those last week, they're, like I said, regular price. They're $15 on Amazon. I threw the link out to our Facebook group, but not a bad little tool, I think, to have laying around for the tech guy. So Rich, that was the extent of my Black Friday. Although I did order a power supply. You know, the days of really expensive power supplies. Remember a couple years ago, and you needed a power supply for a laptop.
What'd you get?
And this is for the Lenovo Yoga 13, and I got it for $25, which it seemed like it's OEM.
You needed the new.
I did need another power supply for it.
Okay.
And
they usually stick you, especially if you buy an OEM, especially if you go to the website, Dell's, okay, you want to buy one? Here, you got $100?
Yeah, it's $79. That's what I expected. It was 79 bones. Hey, this is what I'm going to pay for this thing. It seemed like those, if you could find them. I remember years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, it seemed like you couldn't find them to begin with. If you did want them, and now then you'd have to go to Best Buy and get a generic one, and they'd stick you for like $80. And I got this one for $25, and it shipped next day, and had it in 2 days, and I was like, for $25, that's great. So, whatever the system has figured out, those things as well, and how to get that done, and
stick you for it. Hey, I wanted to ask Kevin. I see your wife is moving from an Android phone to a Windows phone.
Yes, she is.
How's that going? She liking it?
We haven't made the move yet. And like a lot of phone users, it's mostly email and a handful of apps. We just had some kind of weird stuff. She does contract. She's an attorney, and she does contract work. And ran into a couple of oddities with the whole Microsoft Outlook pushing. She uses Outlook on her home PC, but she does not use Exchange. And then getting that to sync up with an Android phone has been a little bit challenging. And my playing with doing it with a Windows phone seems to work pretty seamlessly. So that's a bit of the motivation. Also, for personal email, we're on Comcast, and Comcast seems to have some oddities with their POP3 email and Android's mail client. But I've found some workarounds with that. So it's just one of those cases where she's a little off on being able to get a new phone. I was able to pick up a used 928, and we're gonna give it a whirl.
Nice phone.
Yeah, been very, very pleased with it so far. It's probably laying right here in the pile someplace.
You have a little bit of Mike Howard syndrome going on there, where you've got all your electronics gear within arm's reach.
I that was my pre-show prep. Pre-show prep was getting everything within arm's reach. And this one, it's a 928. I'm not shy about telling you. I bought it from a guy named Dave McCabe out of Indiana.
He finally got that to you, huh?
He's I've heard he's kind of a shifty character. But
he's a little shady. Yes.
I would have thought he would have at least autographed it someplace.
He could have. Did he include any Surface Geek stickers in there?
Oh my God.
And a shirt.
Did you get a shirt?
I get no shirts, but okay. I get Surface Geek stickers, and he is still trying to get rid of Synology screwdrivers
styluses.
Yeah, so.
Very nice.
So I'll report back on how the migration goes for her, but I think it will go pretty well for her use case.
Yeah, I had one of those for a little while, as you might know, as you might have remembered, and I sent it back, but boy, I kind of was crying about it when I was sending it back, and I just sent it back because they didn't have certain features and they had no timetable on when these features would come out, and then a month later they came out with the fixes for these features. Yep. So fairly disgusted, but I mean, I've got a GS4 now. I am still waiting for KitKat. Jim, you got KitKat?
Oh no, that won't come on Sprint for probably another year.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be
Chelsea. I'm not sure I want it. to be honest with you. It's working so well. I think I could do without KitKat at this point. It really just gives you, on the GS4, it just gives you support for all the watches and all the other peripherals.
You just got Jelly Bean? Is that
I
what
you just
you're
got? 4.3.
So that's Jelly Bean. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So we have 4.22 for, you know, I got the phone with 4.22 and then it was upgraded to 4.3 just recently. Yeah, I mean, I will get the KitKat 4.4 at some point. I do, you know, the phone is only a couple months old, so, you know,
supposedly
I think I will
less
have
hardware requirement. Yeah, supposedly less hardware requirement, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sounds like it should run quicker. No, definitely not any slower, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully 4.3, I mean, 4.3 has been great. I've really liked it. So
I like it.
So far, so good. Hey, before we get too far along, let's talk about this OCZ deal, because you threw that link out in there. I really didn't know much about it, and this affects our community a little bit, because we do spend a lot of time talking about SSD drives.
Boy, I'll tell you, I don't really have a, I mean, this, it's kind of a big deal. OCZ is filing for bankruptcy. The short of it, if I remember the article, was that there were some problems with various lines, including their highly touted Vertex line. And that was their downfall, I guess. And they are now, they defaulted on a loan with some company with the name Hercules in it, believe it or not. Great name. And they are going through a process of filing for bankruptcy. Toshiba is looking at them. They may acquire all of their stuff, intellectual property, probably manufacturing equipment, and probably locations. And the idea is that Toshiba would also keep the employees, so no employees would be lost, would lose their jobs. But that's going to be up to some bankruptcy court judge to figure it out. What's going to happen? And that's about all I know about it, except it was a pretty big shock when I saw it, because they are a big name. A lot of guys. Kevin, were you going to?
I was just going to say, don't you think, personal opinion on my part, but when I first saw that, the thing that flashed in the back of my head that's always kind of bugged me about OCZ is, you know, Vertex, probably the most popular product from my point of view, but at one point in time, they had like 7 or 8 different product lines or models, and it was always one of these where somebody would say, hey, I just bought an OCZ drive, and well, what did you get? Well, it was a Petrol. Never heard of it. You go to the website and
yeah, you think they spread themselves out.
I think they did, and a gentleman that I met that used to work at S-Tech, which was a OEM SSD provider that Western Digital bought, his point was OCZ kind of had to have all those different models because of the variety of controllers they used, and that was the way they kept straight who they were getting their flash memory from.
They didn't have their own in-house controllers? Well, no, they were SandForce, right? For sure.
Well, SandForce and what's the one that begins with I?
IndieLynx.
Yes. And I want to say they used somebody else's as well. Can't think who their third partnership was. But yeah. they were using lots of different technology, and you know, his point, and I think it was well taken, is all those different part numbers were different combinations of controllers and memory combinations.
Yeah, maybe, but Crucial is all over the place with that too. I think Crucial is kind of a like mix and match SSD company too. So,
but don't you think Samsung changed the landscape for SSD? I mean,
you mean by doing it all in-house?
Well, it was kind of even from a perspective, from an average consumer perspective, it seemed like in the early days of SSD there were all these companies that nobody ever heard of. And let's be honest, nobody knows what the average guy does not know what OCZ means or is or even did, right? They're not a name brand company, so to speak. And then, you know, Intel was doing it. They were out early as well, but they were super expensive in those early. I mean, you were paying a premium cost. And so it was them and Intel and a few other companies that you never heard of. And we went along for a long time, and then Samsung seemed to jump in and push the prices down some, but really deliver some pretty good quality hardware. that was received.
I think it's generally agreed that the reason they're able to do that is because they make their NAND and they develop their own controllers. You know, they write their own software, their own firmware. You know, and they put it all together, so they're a all-in-one manufacturer, whereas a lot of other SSD manufacturers buy their NAND from Samsung, Toshiba, Hynix, I think, is another one, mm-hmm. a bunch of different ones. So, you know, when you're writing your firmware for something that you maybe don't quite understand, I'm just speculating here. You know what I'm saying. You know, you can do a much better job if you know exactly what it is that you're getting, and they certainly know because they build it. So,
yeah, and that's, and we talked about that last time we were together. The only, as far as I know, the only companies that build NAND-based flash today are Samsung, Toshiba, Hynix, and the Micron Intel Crucial partnership. And then your controllers, you know, SandForce is still out there, but they were acquired by LSI. So that's a good news, bad news thing. You know, good news is LSI really wanted it for cores and some of their ASICs and single chip stuff, but it's good that a semiconductor company owns it. Otherwise, you're kind of out there developing your own. So it'll be interesting to see. I guess I always look at, you know, S-Tech is a name that the average guy probably has never heard of.
No, but, tell me about it a little bit.
Well, they were, so in the big storage arrays that my company sells, like EMC and Network Appliance and IBM and HP, if you got SSDs in those, they were probably from S-Tech or a couple other of the bigger OEM vendors.
And they've been around for a long time, haven't they?
Yes, yeah, they were
compared to like these... Yeah, consumer, yeah.
Yep, so they have a long history. And they all started in SAS-based SSDs. And if you go out to Western Digital's, you know, interesting thing, Western Digital is really kind of keeping Hitachi Data Systems or Hitachi Storage Group as a separate entity, and they're parking, like, the SSD drives over there. They just started shipping a 12-gigabit SAS-based SSD, so they're staying down that performance path. But, you know, it's time will tell on this. Who you know, who the major mm-hmm. players are, and I think, like you said, it's not a surprise that Toshiba would want to grab up the manufacturing capabilities and the intellectual property and anything else around this. Mm-hmm. The downside is, you know, the verbiage is they're not. It sounds like as you said, it'll all come down to lawyers deciding how it breaks out.
Yeah.
But they're acquiring assets, which unfortunately tends to mean that they're probably not going to support the old OCZ product. You know, I doubt they'll carry through on that. So, you know, one of my things is, especially on SSDs, hearing that OCZ is filing for bankruptcy. Personally, I'll probably look at every OCZ drive I have and do a BIOS firmware upgrade on it to make sure that I have it up to the latest firmware level before OCZ either shuts down or, you know, goes away.
Yeah, sounds like a good idea.
Well, and let's make sure we say, I mean, OCZ did have some quality problems right out of the chute, right? I mean, I don't know if we said that or not, but the guys in chat are saying, hey, I got OCZs, haven't had a problem, and it's very possible that the OCC you have didn't have any problems, but it's well documented that they've had some production issues, a little bit higher than most on their drives coming out of the factory.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I would agree. And of course, I have an OCZ drive sitting here because.
Of course you do.
Because if Mike Howard was on here, he would have one to show as well.
That's awesome. Just pull it out of, and, you know, I could say anything. This is the, you know, so do you have any paper clips? And you'd be able to pull those out.
So, and you might say, hey, I hear the Zune Marketplace is going away. Well, yes, it is. And I'm a little angry because my 32-bit Zune HD, no.
You still got it. Is that the box?
That's the box for the
Show me that box.
Zune.
What? I got a 16 gig HD.
This is a 32 gig HD.
It's sitting here somewhere. I got the four gig. Flash.
It gets used every day when I go for my my 30-minute morning walk.
Yeah. Oh, there it is.
Real quick, before we get too far off this, so from my standpoint, Toshiba is trying to acquire the intellectual property for the most part of OCG and get some of the patents that they have associated with it. Where's the current market at today? If I'm your average consumer, if I'm your average tech guy, and I'm out there looking for SSDs, Kevin, let me ask you, what are you recommending right now at this point?
I default to the four that we just talked about. That's my lead kind of position. And within each of those, we always have to remember, you know, take a Samsung. Samsung will have, as many of the vendors, they have an entry-level product, a mid-range product, and a high-end product. But I tend to lean towards Samsung, Toshiba, Hynix, and then either Intel, Crucial, or Micron in that kind of fashion. From there, you know, that's where I probably, you know, I have a lot of OCZ drives. I've only had a couple of them fail, and OCZ has treated me well on exchanges. But the other drives I've had real good luck with have been Mushkin and SanDisk, actually, are probably the other two that pop into mind for me. At one point in time, SanDisk had their own SanDisk had their own controller. I think they've defaulted back to somebody else's. But things I always look for is, and if you see sometimes when I post deals on an SSD that's maybe a brand name we haven't heard of, I think I posted one for a company called ADATA. First thing I do is go check their website to see if they offer firmware updates. And that's probably if I hit somebody's website for an SSD and there's no support documents or no firmware updates, I probably stay away from that product. But that's probably my next measuring lines there. And, you know, from a pricing point of view, for a basic entry SSD, I feel like it's a good deal when it's anywhere between 60 cents a gig and 50 cents a gig. We've been hovering back around 60, 75 just due to some flash shortages, but we had some good refurb deals back here a week or two ago, which OCZ filing for bankruptcy now explains why a week ago Newegg had a ton of OCZ refurbs they were blowing out. So. And as always, I have to state, I do buy refurb SSD drives, and I have really not had any issues with them.
I think it's not a bad deal. John Stutzman says, Samsung, Crucial, Intel, and Corsair. Those are kind of the four he goes with. And then Tim Black says he most recently purchased drives, and they've all been Samsung, so he's kind of gone that direction as well. Hey, Kevin, what about, and Rich too, what about this Kingston drive that I threw out there the other day into the Facebook group? Kingston, they were blowing out some new, you know, these are 120 gig SSDs that were for $70, and actually quite a few people picked those up on that deal that was out there. We have not mentioned Kingston. Is that a brand you would go with, Kevin?
So I've not used Kingston myself, and my buddy from S-Tech kind of threw them in the same category as OCZ, that they have a lot of different models due to different pricing and different routes they've bought. But if you look at, that's one place where I would default to, like, the Newegg user reviews, and they get great reviews. And you go to Kingston's website, they have all firmware updates for them. So if I needed a certain capacity drive and Kingston was right in there from a price point of view, I would definitely buy one. I don't think I've had any bad experience that would preclude me from buying them.
Yeah, and I'm looking on Amazon site. Out of 180 ratings, 145 five stars on these particular, you know, the 22.4 and just a handful, maybe two handfuls of three and one handful of a one rating on that, but that's not bad. It seems like those are getting, like I said, we had a few people pick them up. You know, we posted that on the Facebook page, theaverageguy.tv/Facebook, and had a few people snatch them up. So if you're listening to this and you were one of those guys that bought it, let us know. Send me a note back, jim@theaverageguy.tv, and let us know how that's working for you.
And if you, it's odd, ironically, you mentioned that one of today's shell shockers, the Newegg is a 240 gig Kingston for $139. So there are the deals abound all of a sudden.
Yeah, $139 in Amazon as well.
That's not a refurb either?
For that same drive.
No, that's a new one, yep.
And of course, I prefer you go to Amazon because that helps support the Average Guy Tech Scholarship Fund. But
the AverageGuy.tv/Amazon.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yes, the AverageGuy.tv/Amazon gets you there. Yeah. Which we've had really good. Like I mentioned before, Gordon is going to review that. I think I mentioned this before. Gordon is going to review that Nest fire and smoke and carbon monoxide detector for us. In that, I was able to buy that for him through the scholarship fund. So buy an Amazon, and we turn those funds back around. Even had a guy mention on the Facebook group. He said, "Hey, I bought this unit. Can I? It was a Blu-ray player. Can I review it for the site? Do I have to go through the tech scholarship fund?" I'm just like, "No, just write a review. We'll throw it up there, man. It's, it's that easy. We're just looking. You know, if I could get everybody that listened to write one review a year." Right, we'd have think about how many things we could cover in course of a year if I had the 500 or 600 or 700 people that listen to this show. That'd be pretty good. So anyway, so think about it. If you're listening and you got something you want to review, it doesn't take much. Just write something up. I'll help you with it, and we'll get it posted on the site. But this Kingston deal seemed pretty good to me, and the reviews look pretty good. So I'll be interested to see what people think in it after they get them.
Hey, I wanted to really mention. I wanted to mention really quickly. Remember last time we were on? I was on Home Tech, and I was talking about the Google Talk plugin problems that we were having trying to get that installed, uninstalled. Mm-hmm. Actually, happened to me on. I pulled an Acronis image and stuck it on one of my drives, and then I went to use Hangout on that particular machine. And it did the same thing. I couldn't uninstall, I couldn't reinstall, I couldn't repair it, I couldn't whatever. So what I found is, what the heck did I find? I didn't want to go through all of that stuff that I mentioned that the techs had come up with, and I found something. I looked around in app data, you know, your hidden folder app data on your Windows 7 machines. I was looking around for anything that was Google related that was a .msi, and I found something called Google Update Helper .msi. And I said, well, what the heck? It's not running. Let's try it, see if it works. And it did. It just it fixed the problem. I was able to uninstall the old one. I was able to reinstall to install the update. So, if there's like 0.1% of people out there listening to this that applies to, there you go. Run the Google Update Helper.msi.
And where's the file folder location for that, Rich?
I found it in App Data. You know, okay.
So it's your username, right? Your username, App Data.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
A Google folder.
I don't have the particular Google folder, but just search for Google Update Helper, all one word, .msi. And if it's there, you know, good for you.
I had another interesting thing along those lines. I was setting up the Surface to remote into the Surface. I just wrote a post on that out of the AverageGuy.tv. So, you know, you can remote control anything from the Surface, but somebody asked some questions, can you remote control the Surface? In the Surface 2 and Surface RT, of course, you can't install the TeamViewer version or whatever LogMeIn version that you need because those are all x86 apps. Mm-hmm. And the current Windows Experience or Windows, what are they calling that thing? Windows, the Metro, let's just call it Metro because everybody knows it by that. The Metro app does not support remote controlling the RT devices. And so when I was setting that thing up for remote assistance, right, Windows has remote assistance embedded in it. Nobody ever uses it, and it actually works pretty well. You request remote assistance, you get a little, you get this, it generates this little script. File that you send to the person, that and then they click on it, open it, and you give them a code, and it's super secure, and it works out pretty well. And so I wrote that all up on a post at theaverageguy.tv. But in the middle of that, it said, hey, your device is not configured for this service. And it was like there was an option to run the troubleshooter. Okay, so I ran the troubleshooter. It fixed it. It actually opened the device up and made it work. It's like, wow.
I don't want to get too crazy here, but some of those Microsoft fix-it troubleshooters actually fix things.
Actually did work.
Yeah, they actually did. Who knew?
Yeah. So it doesn't give you, this is interesting, and as we talked about tablets earlier, you know, that's the kind of thing. What do you do when grandma or mom has the tablet now, and you're the tech, you're the remote tech guy, and she can't figure out, you know, Kevin, you got that
pick me.
Yeah. What do you do on those things where, you know, you can't necessarily remote control the screens?
Yes, you can, Jim.
In this case with the Surface, I couldn't, but how do we do it, Kevin?
Well, you'd have to force Grandma to buy a Samsung tablet, and if you have TeamViewer, TeamViewer and Samsung, you can actually remote control the screen. You can actually take over and drive.
On the Android or on the Windows?
On the Android.
On the Android side.
Yeah. Okay. So not Windows. You're right. Your solution there is about the best a guy can come up with for right now, of getting in and looking over the shoulder. But
and that's all it allows you to do. You can't control it. You can just see it.
Yeah. Yep.
But Android with TeamViewer, and is that locked down to the Samsung stuff?
Currently, it's only locked down. It's locked down to Samsung.
And so, can I do it on my phone? Galaxy S4?
I know it works on the tablet. So my daughter's tablet is a original Galaxy Tab 10, and from TeamViewer, I can connect to that remotely, and you have to, it's called support. And then there's an app. If you go to the Play Store and do TeamViewer, I want to say there's a Samsung Connect app or something like that.
All right. I'll take a picture while we're talking.
And then when you then from your PC, you add it like you add any other device. And when you go to connect, you'll have to actually on your phone, you have to accept the connection. But I've never tried it on a phone, but I definitely know it works on the tablets because I've been able to drive a couple of times that way. And
TeamViewer Quick Support.
That's it. And is there one that says TeamViewer Quick Support Samsung or Samsung?
No, this one just says TeamViewer Quick Support.
Oh, there's a bunch of them. There's one for Arcos, Alcatel, Medion, I don't know, bunch.
It says get support for your mobile device from any Windows or Mac computer. You can now receive technical remote support for your mobile devices. Technicians have the ability to chat, transfer files back and forth, view device information, stop processes, push and pull Wi-Fi settings, and much more.
Yep. There is a Samsung. I see it.
So Jim, the one you have, that works with any Android device. The one for Samsung specifically allows you to do remote control.
You can remote control your phone.
I haven't tried it with the phone, but definitely with the Samsung tablet, you can control the tablet.
Let me see what this says here.
That's very cool. They also have TeamViewer for meetings. I've been a big TeamViewer fan. I like it a lot. And
To shift gears even more on TeamViewer, this week they had announcements for support for Linux and some enhanced Apple support as well. So for folks listening, you know, TeamViewer is free for personal use, and it's a great tool, great technology.
Yeah, yeah. No, I use it. It's kind of my exclusive remote control client that it goes across anything. I mean, you can control anything.
Well, and I haven't played with a lot, but TeamViewer 9, they've actually got a function now where you can transfer files between your TeamViewer systems without actually logging on for remote control. So I know I end up doing that a lot where I just need to grab a file off from one of my home computers. I'm on the road. I log into it. I do a file transfer. I haven't played with it yet, but on TeamViewer 9, apparently they've decoupled some of these things so you can actually do file transfers between your trusted machines without actually setting up that remote session.
Wouldn't it be great if you could do like a bare metal backup through Team? I'm just kidding.
It would be,
why don't you just tell them that's what you want?
Be a home server.
I'm sure they'll get it out by next week.
The TeamViewer home server show.
Mm-hmm. I love TeamViewer. I've been using them for years.
Yeah, no, and it's great, especially when you, like my mom, you know, I have it installed on her PC, but I could easily just have her go to the web page, click, you know, okay, mom, go to teamviewer.com, mm-hmm. you know, click be supported or whatever that link is that's there. Mm-hmm. Read me that number. Okay, bam, yeah. and I can just connect to it and take it over.
I maintain, a check on my daughter's server, little Windows Home server version 1, check and make sure updates are going in and all of that stuff. Check the drive temps, check the space used, and basically that's about it.
So Jim, you got TeamViewer Quick Support. That's the first thing you download to your phone, and then it's QS add-on for Samsung.
Oh, so it does say QS. When I was looking at that, mm-hmm. In the corner it said QS.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's TeamViewer Quick Support has the QS on it, but then there's a second app that says QS add-on, and that's where Rich was seeing the different vendors. So you want to grab the one for Samsung, and that will give you it should give you that full support.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say the one I've got up
QS
on my screen.
QS add-on for Samsung, right? Yep.
Yeah, and then look for the one under description. It'll say designed for phones. There's also one for tablets.
Okay.
So just make sure you grab the phone one.
Well, tell you what. Well, I'll set this up while Rich talks about DNS, because he spent some time in a class recently.
Jeez.
And wanted to talk a little bit about
DNS. Oh, my God. Yes.
DNS.
I always feel nervous talking in front of the tech community about anything I learned, because, you know, there's plenty of people out there that knew this when they were born knowing this stuff. But, okay, so I'm taking Intro to Networking, and we're learning a bunch of things. One of the things I was looking at recently was DNS. Now, I knew simply a good analogy was DNS is like the internet phone book. You need a number. Your computer actually needs a number. They can't use Google.com, but your the networking part of your computer, NIC card and the stack, needs a number. So you go out to DNS, you give it Google.com, and it says Google.com's address is 75.whatever. So I was looking at that, and I said, well, okay, what else is there to DNS? And it turns out there's a bit more. And I wrote it up on my little blog site here. And basically, what will happen is this. If this is a fresh lookup and it's not been cached somewhere along the way, either in your computer, but say you're doing some obscure site, you're just researching, the query will go out to your ISP's DNS, and it will say, okay, I don't know what that is. Let's ask the root server. The root server will say, okay, what are you looking at? Are you looking at a .net? Are you looking at a .com? What are you looking at here? And if it's, say, in the case of, we'll just use Google.com. Then it says, okay, well, look, why don't I send you to a top-level domain name server? So it says, okay, here's the address for a top-level domain name server. And it sends that back to the ISP's DNS. The ISP uses that, and it contacts that DNS. That DNS sends back the actual name server for Google.com. And you use that, it uses that, and it goes out to that name server, Google.com's name server, which finally sends back the IP for Google.com, and your ISP will then turn around, your ISP's name server will turn around and send it down to you, and you use that number. Now, that I thought that was pretty cool. I didn't know that, and that was a little neat bit of information. The other part of that, all of that, is having said that, most likely, most typically, especially Google, it's going to probably be in your own DNS cache on your computer, or it's going to be definitely going to be logged cached locally at your ISP's DNS. But if you go to some, like, say if you just created a brand new site, Kevin, you've got a new site and it's not cached anywhere, so you give me the address and it's actually going to make all of that TAF back and forth that I just talked about, those trips back and forth, till it gets out to the name server that is doling out your IP address for your site. So, now that's what I knew. That's what I found out about it. Please feel free to correct me, my tech buddies.
I,
and
You have the same understanding that I have, so that's I'm not going to argue with you.
All right. And then one other thing that I found out, one other thing that I thought was neat is that, so you can use NSLOOKUP. I think people might know that you can use NSLOOKUP in the command line to take and do a reverse lookup. So if you have google.com, you would type in NSLOOKUP space google.com, and you would get the IP address for google.com. But you can do different kinds of NSLOOKUPs. So if you just type in NSLOOKUP and hit enter, you'll get a prompt, just a prompt that's a greater than sign. And you can type in something like, you can look up an MS records for theaverageguy.tv. You could look up the name server records. You could look up the CNAME records. You could look up the IP6 to see if there's an IP version 6. Record for those sites, and there's a bunch more that you could look up, but I thought that was pretty interesting. So a couple of things, this class is actually making me learn a few things, and I thought that was pretty neat, and I thought I'd pass that along. And that's it. Oh, and one more thing. I am reinforcing a lot of this class with something called Pluralsight, and I like Pluralsight, so I'm mentioning it again. It's got a ton of lessons on there. If you're in school, and your school has a program with Microsoft, a liaison with Microsoft's educational offerings, Pluralsight is one of the things that they'll offer through DreamSpark, which is Microsoft DreamSpark. And they have a ton of lesson plans on there. You can learn about everything from ASP to XML to networking, and not just one type of networking. I mean, there's a bunch of different networking levels in there. They talk about Cisco networking. They talk about beginner networking, bunch of different plans. And my opinion is, you take a look for yourselves, but my opinion is it's pretty well done. It's actually very well done, laid out pretty logically. If you don't have a school subscription, which would be free, it will cost you $29 a month. And but, you know, hey, you don't have to subscribe for a whole year. Maybe you just want to learn about something and you're willing to shell out $29 to learn about networking. My opinion is that it's well worth it. I think they put the information right out there for you, and they present it very well, which... Yeah, it's pretty cool. Anyway.
DNS is one of those old school deals, Rich. I know, and I took my N plus certification years ago, maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The internet was a lot harsher of a place in those days, and getting connected to it was really difficult early on. You know, a lot of dial up, and there's a lot. It was just a lot of manual things you needed to do, and it seemed like the average network guy needed to know more. And I think we've gotten so many layers now. Both on the PC and on any OS, the networking has become so simplified that for the most part the average consumer just expects it's a two-click connection to anybody's network.
Yeah.
And most of that stuff seems to be set up even at the enterprise level. I mean, is it the expectation now that we walk into an enterprise and I should just be able to connect? Right? I mean, it's like, okay, what's your open Wi-Fi? Right? We ask that question. What's your open Wi-Fi? And it's just an expectation you make. They might have a guest ID or they might have a password you have to put in to get connected to it. But for the most part, the complexity of that operation, although it was kind of fun, you and I were chatting about that over the last week, and I was going back to some of my N plus stuff and remembering, the various, there's some, when you, a ping or a trace route, figuring out where that thing is going and the number of servers you're going through. And Christian, all the time when we're working on the site, is always saying, the DNS servers need to flush the cache or, whatever of, those pieces that have to be done. So at the highest levels, I think there's still a lot there. But I think the average consumer, for the most part, that is so transparent now with DNS.
Yeah.
They just see internet, right? They don't know when they're typing in google.com. All the things it's
and
doing.
If they know one thing, they know maybe we should use OpenDNS because we can configure things. They might have heard of that, and that's probably about the extent of it. But boy, I'll tell you what. I mean, I just did a little bit of reading. I wrote this part up, and then I did some more reading, there's a lot more of it that I was beginning to absorb that I can't actually put it out there in any kind of structure at this point. But
well, we were talking in the pre-show.
That's fascinating.
We were talking in the pre-show about the various DNS servers or services that you can use besides just your ISP. So they are certainly a DNS server for you. Oftentimes, though, Comcast, Cox, who else? What IS? Who do you have, Kevin? Who's your ISP?
Comcast.
There's another
Time one. Warner.
Time Warner. Thank you. Those and even no, Verizon. Even Verizon, right? They have their own. They do not necessarily give it all they can on those DNS servers. They don't. It's a necessary evil for them. For them to host that stuff, and they try and cache it so you don't have to go all the way back to the internet to get stuff because they want it to be fast for you. But oftentimes it's not a great experience. And we've talked about this before, but you can get with a service like OpenDNS, and they just go to opendns.com and point your router or your PC over to them, and they'll cache that, or they'll take care of it for you. The advantage to OpenDNS, and I recommend this for a lot of guys who have kids, is they're very, very protective of your network. So if your kids go somewhere they shouldn't, or you go somewhere where you shouldn't, and it's malware or it's phishing or it's any of those.
They do have some filtering.
Even a site that's been compromised, right?
Right,
they block that.
Right.
And and I'm trying to think the one I used to have their address memorized. I have to go back and look it up. But you can just take your router and point it right towards their servers, and you don't even have to sign up for an account. Just point them to their servers, and they'll automatically start going through OpenDNS. Google's the same way. I think they're 4.4.4.4 or 8.8.8.8. I can't remember which one.
The 8 for sure. I think it's 8.8.4.4.
Yeah, that's what it is. And you can be going through Google as a DNS kind of router for you. So
right.
Both those options are available as well. I wonder how many people are doing that out there listening. I wonder how many folks send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv or jim@theaverageguy.tv. Let me know what you're using, because that's for me, that stuff's important in what I do. And so I'd like to know if you're using something other than OpenDNS or Google. I know there's a couple other ones out there. Rich, can I share the findings here on this cool little TeamViewer app onto the Android?
Yeah.
Here, let me bring this
Do
up
it.
Real quick.
Do
so,
it.
Kevin, this is actually really cooler than I thought. Let's see. How do I? Okay, we'll do that full screen so it shows. So what you're looking here is, so I'm on a Windows 7 box, and I'm remoting into my phone at this point. So I have my phone under remote control. Now, not what I thought it was initially, Kevin, as we look at this, but this is just the main dashboard. This is some pretty cool information to know about my phone. And I know I'm putting my internal IP out there, so just, guys, be responsible. It's not a big deal. You can't get to it anyways. But, you can see the manufacturer and my serial number. It's probably not good either. You see that we're at version 4.3. There's a whole bunch of information you probably shouldn't be seeing in here, but that's okay.
then actually drop that thing quick.
Yeah, all of a sudden I'm like, that everything about my phone is there. Hopefully no one will hack into my phone with that information. This is where I thought when we're doing control over the phone, and I don't know, like, you know how you do remote control over the PC. I'm not sure the phone. I can send it a screenshot.
So that works on all my other tablets, but up in the upper left-hand corner where it says remote control, when you click that...
There we go.
Now look at your phone. Your phone should be asking you for permission.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, allow. So let me... And then I might need to reshare my... I did say allow, so it's connecting. I might need to reshare a separate screen. So hang tight if you're watching live or the recorded version. Hang tight on this. By the way, if you're listening to the audio of this, for this exercise, you really need to come out to the YouTube channel. So go out to theaverageguy.tv/YouTube and have a peek at this. Okay, I said yes, and it still says it's connecting.
What are you doing? Oh, yeah, okay.
I'm trying to do a remote desktop connection to it. Screen sharing is active. Here, let me see if I can show you what I'm looking at here.
And this is on your desktop, you brought this up?
Yeah, I'm bringing this up on the desktop. So let's
All
see,
right.
Android.
Let me
okay,
see.
So here's the, Kevin, so here's what I'm seeing. That's the number. Probably, again, I probably shouldn't be broadcasting that number, but that's all right.
It'd be pretty tough for anybody to hack that. But yeah, you may need to start it. So on your phone, did you load the Quick Support Quick Support for Samsung?
Yep. In fact, you load one, and when you open it, it says, "Hey, there's a Quick Support plugin. Go ahead and download it." So.
You may just want to kill TeamViewer and restart it and see. But yeah, you should. It seems like the first couple of times I tried it, it took a little bit to get the handshake down.
Let's try this number again here. Ring ding ding allow. Okay. Hmm. 1 second here. And then I'm going to go up and say remote control. Okay, and it's
so how did you get that to happen? Allow. You're on your desktop.
I'm on my desktop, and I've got TeamViewer 8 at this point installed.
Okay,
on
so
my
do
desktop.
I. Yep, so
and
do
then I.
I
went to my phone and installed those two pieces of software. You need the Quick Support and the plugin for Samsung. And then.
Need both. Okay, well, I guess that's the part I missed.
Installed. Yeah. And let me get off the sharing of you just until I figure this out. It's having trouble connecting, so we'll just let it sit here for a second. And then my coward said he already did a screen grab. So, somebody breaks into my phone, Howard.
Of course, of course he did.
I fired up TeamViewer on both, and the phone gives you the number, right? It's like that unique phone number for your device number. And I put that in the remote control section of TeamViewer and said, here, I want you to control this device. And then it makes a connection. And what you're seeing on that first screen, and Kevin, it's not connecting at the moment. Doesn't mean it doesn't work. Just for me, it's not connecting at the moment. But let me jump back over and share my screen here so we can at least talk about this. So in theory, that should work, right? Yep. Where I'm getting that. I can also request a screenshot. So if I don't want to do sharing, I could go in there and say, "Hey, send me a screenshot." And if I click this, then on my phone, you can't see it. On my phone, it says, "Hey, please take a screenshot. On most devices, that's volume down and power off." And I assume when I take that screenshot, it's going to automatically grab that and post it here so that I can see it, right? And then it's got a list of apps that are available to me on the phone, which is kind of cool. You can see all the various applications that I have there, a group of processes that are currently running. So if you want to dig in and see what's there and how much memory it's taking and such, that's there. A list of the settings that I have. So I could, if I wanted to go in and say, well, what is the setup? You can see these are my Wi-Fi settings here. If I wanted to go in and change those here remotely, I could if somebody was having trouble connecting. And then the old system log, which I had no idea what to do with something like this, but it is there indeed. And then there's the file transfer button up there, right? That's going to allow me, this is what's going to allow me to jump in and make that. Here, you're seeing, this is my PC on the left, you're seeing my PC file structure here. This is what that looks like on my home network. And then over here is the file here. So I could... this is actually, I have an application for this. I was just thinking, how do I get all my pictures off my phone easily and get them moved over to my SkyDrive, right? Because I want SkyDrive to be the point of record for photos for me. Well, here we go. I think I'm going to go, in this case, probably want to go to the SD card because I think that's where they live. How would I get there?
Probably up.
Yeah, it's not letting me get up to the card here. One sec.
Okay, so I'm going to grab my Samsung tablet. I'll be back in a shake.
Okay. So, Rich, that's the TeamViewer look there. That's kind of cool. Did I lose you, Rich? Oh, you're muted, Rich.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know if you already mentioned it. You probably did, but you can uninstall apps from here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I just realized you couldn't see that file transfer. So let me open that back up again, and I'll rescreen.
So you went through all the tabs. I'm sorry. I was totally focused on what I was doing. You went through all the tabs, right?
I did.
All right. Cool. Yeah. No, very cool.
Let me go through. I'll recapture the... And you even get a dialogue here of... the file transfer. I went through that, but I realized I wasn't sharing it with the video. So there's a look. On the left-hand side is my local network. That's the PC that I have TeamViewer running on. And then on the right-hand side is the actual phone. What we were struggling a little bit with was to find how to get to the SD card. Because that is where my... This looks like this is the phone
and file structure. Doesn't it say external or... go down a little bit. No, I mean, just scroll down that list. I think it's there somewhere. SD card? What's that? There you go, I think.
Yeah. There you go. Maybe those should have a lot more pictures than that, though.
Well, there are so many places that these... The DCM... Yeah, there it is. There you go.
Now, that's the same...
Okay.
Yeah, I would need to track that down to say where's the one where... Well, let's just say, for example, those would be DCIM. These were probably pictures that were taken before I switched over, you know, I forced it to switch over to the...
Next, I'm going to try that myself.
To the card, you know. But in theory, I mean, I'm thinking here I could just... grab these, move them over onto my network, because I've got access to my network here as well, which is a little bit scary in what I have access to here on there. But pretty cool. Kevin, I didn't realize it was this powerful on the mobile device. I can even send messages to myself.
Yep.
Hey, Jim.
You know, and as always, it's designed for IT departments, and we get it for personal use, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There it goes. And I got a message from myself that said, "Hey Jim." So you can see here, I sent. Let's see if I can get that focus. No luck.
Pretty darn cool. I like it.
Yeah, it's worth the price of admission.
Yeah, I think so.
And especially, like you say, if you're supporting family members and trying to, you know, head down that road, it is a handy way to John, take care of everybody.
So John Stutzman is watching on the YouTube channel, and he writes in here. I'll select that question. So he writes, "Dear Jim, could you please show the previous screen? I didn't get all the codes written down." John, thanks for watching. And then, of course, he then sends a note back that says, "Haha, just kidding." So, John, thanks for using the Q&A feature inside of the Google Hangout infrastructure.
What else we got here?
Well, let's see. We got a few more minutes.
I want to tell you guys about something that I did. You're going to love this. I deleted a partition, a 1.5 terabyte partition with about 1 terabyte worth of data on it last night. And I just noticed it about maybe an hour before the show, and I said, "Oh, isn't that slick?" But I remembered a device that I use, a utility I use called, there's a bunch, but the one I've used before is called Test Disk, and it's been out for a long time. That thing just went boom, 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 answer question. Yeah, look for deleted partitions on that particular hard drive. Oh, you found it? Go ahead and write the partition table. As soon as I did that, refreshed my Windows Explorer, there it was. The drive was back. Everything's back. Now, I'll tell you, a lot of people that would have deleted their partition would have been like screaming and crying and freaking out and probably taking their computer down to their local tech, who would have probably gotten $100 out of them for that. And it took, literally, it took, once I got it, once I started up the test disk, which I'll include a link in the notes, it took about a minute before I had my files back. So... just more fun with hard drives. I'm trying to break them.
There you go. Yeah, it never, you know, with some of that stuff, for me, set it and forget it, right? Don't mess with them, because you never know what you're going to lose. I used to mess around with stuff all the time like that.
Yeah. And
Mike Howard says he's going to let me find out. I posted the question, I wonder what you could get with that information that I put out in that screenshot of all that info on my phone. I wonder what you could get into.
Oh, my God. I'm going to spoof your MAC address on everything. Go to allbadsites.com.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's an interesting security question.
If you want, I will.
Oh, no. I don't think it's that.
I will blank it out.
Well, hey, the question is, should I? You know, should I blank it out?
Yeah, you should. I mean, amongst our friends, not a big deal, but I don't know. You never know. But what are you worried about? The NSA is listening to everything you're saying right? We already know this.
That's true. Now they are. Now that you said that, they are.
Yes, no. Yeah, it's like the Eye of Sauron.
You just invoked. We just showed up on a watch
list.
Oh,
boy, yeah. You blew it, man. Yeah. We weren't even looking at you, but you said our name. And I will. Yeah. Hey, what do you guys think of this? I was reading about Google Glass, and I was reading about this restaurant owner in Seattle who just told this guy, hey, you know, turn it off or leave, and the guy wouldn't turn it off, so he kicked him out. And I guess he's done it. He's a restaurant owner. I guess he has a couple of restaurants, and he's kicked people out of another restaurant that he owns. What do you guys think about that? You think it's like new technology, and people are freaking out about it because they just don't get it, or do you think it's creepy? You think it's an imposition on your comfort level? You're sitting there, and somebody's got, and they're looking at you, and they've got. Obviously, they're wearing Google Glass. How do you feel about that?
I think I don't know how much of an imposition it is, but you know, Google Glass by itself is kind of just an odd thing to me. I don't know. It's not a good analogy, but it's like it may sound hypocritical, but you know, I fly a lot for work and. I love the idea that, you know, on Delta and one or two other airlines, I can keep my electronics out and internet access starts at 10,000 feet. That's good enough for me. If they could get internet access to start at a lower point, that'd be even better. But now a couple airlines look like they want to one-up that by letting you make phone calls up in the air. I think that's a horrendous idea.
I just think
of the number of the times that my wife and I are driving someplace and we're both on the phone with different people. It's just annoying. And so in some ways with the Google Glass kind of thing, even though I get it, I'm out in public. And when you're out in public, you know, a lot of your privacy is diminished, but if I was having a meeting with somebody who had one of those on, I think I'd ask them to take it off, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, from a business point of view, there are lots of times where I'm in meetings where we talk about things that might not be for public knowledge. And so I think in a lot of ways, you know, it's one where you need to know the environment or the reason behind the whole thing. But, I don't know. I do find Google Glass to be kind of creepy.
Okay, there you go. You said it.
I think it makes you just look stupid, to be honest. I mean, when it first came, I'm a gadget guy. I mean, I love gadgets, right? I'm all in it. But when the people I've seen with them on, you're like, you know, I don't know. It's just maybe that's a sign I'm getting old or something, but. I don't know. It doesn't look right. Now, if they could make it be more integrated, and I'm sure this is where they're headed, right? That's going to look more integrated into a pair of glasses so you don't look like a dork with this big old metal thing going down the side, you know, and a very obvious. I'm sure it's going to get better. So I think maybe in the current, you know, for a while there, those glasses, and maybe they're still popular, for a while there, those big, thick, heavy-rimmed glasses were getting real popular, you know, and they would have, the earpieces would be thick plastic, you know, it was just like all, you know, they were thick. Well, you embed a Google Glass in that design already so it doesn't look different than just a regular pair of glasses. Okay, Yeah, if it's if on the corner I've got just a little opening where there's a camera there and that makes sense and it's already embedded into my glasses, I think that's okay. This big honking metal thing on the side of the glasses, especially, and I've seen people wear them over their glasses. I'm like, oh, nerd alert. Come on, dude. I'm a nerd, and I haven't gone that far. So that's my opinion, Rich.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's what I thought. And then we'll probably be laughing at ourselves in a year from now when everybody has them. But
I don't think it's going to go that way.
I hope not, because you know all the arguments about, well, you're in public, you give up your privacy anyway. It's like, not really. I don't have people running up to me with cameras or standing across the street, you know, taking photos of me or sitting in restaurants, you know. I can't do anything about somebody if they actually do want to spy on me, but just casually, because they got nothing better to do, to be, you know, photographing or videotaping me and my family, I'm not really... I don't like the idea of that. I don't like it. Yeah. I would probably move or ask the person to move.
I just don't know if it's practical to have that all on all the time, you know. It's like the jerk, Steve Martin in The Jerk, right? And he's got that nose piece that, you know.
Opti-grip.
Jim, come on.
I'm wondering if we're going to see a day when guys, you know, your eyes are permanently stuck in the upper, and to the right.
Come on.
Well, hey, my mom used to say all the time, if you cross your eyes and you leave it there long enough, they're going to get stuck. So, you know.
Of course she did. You look at me like that, mister.
Yeah. Well, I still struggle. The Google Glass thing, I just struggle with what the proper, you know, I use it all the time when we're posting or talking about stuff, but it's the use case, you know, and my use of technology might be different than your use of technology, but I just don't get what the use case is for Google Glass. And, you know, we were in a meeting the other day, the OneNote function behind on the new Windows tablets, the Metro app is fantastic. The handwriting recognition works great, but also the camera function ties in directly. So we got done whiteboarding something out, and I leaned back, took a snapshot of it, but I made sure to, you know, because it wasn't just my company in the meeting, it was, hey, is it okay if I take a snapshot of that for my notes? So, you know, and the reason I asked that is I could kind of see kind of a weird look on their face about me taking a picture of something that might have non-disclosure information on it. So it is a different kind of a world out there, and I think because we take pictures of stuff so readily, we probably don't always think about what needs to what needs to happen there,
especially from a permission standpoint. And maybe this is where Gene Roddenberry got it wrong on Star Trek, with because he was right on a lot of things, but you know, in that communicator badge, there would have been an opportunity to put a camera in there.
Oh yeah,
and to see exactly what happened, because you know in those episodes they'd always be like, let's roll back to, you know, the computer to see what happened, what transpired, and you know, you got these weird shots, these weird camera angles that you never saw on the set, right? Somehow cameras were embedded everywhere in the ship. Well, but what not better? I mean, that would be okay, but what not better to have those embedded in the communications device that they had, and see the video from that perspective. I've seen some examples where folks have embedded a camera to their chest, right, and then have videoed or have taken, you know, shots all day long, or one shot every 10 seconds, or some of those kinds of things. You know, these unique situations. But to me, that seems like that might be a little better of an implementation than throwing it on your face, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That's didn't come up in Star Trek, and lots of times our science fiction mimics where we're, you know, think back to the Next Gen, right? Star Trek Next Gen, and they all walked around with these tablets, right? We didn't know what they were in 1994, right? We had no idea these things were coming up, and now you got that 7-inch tablet in front of you, Kevin? Put that thing up there. Yeah, now flip that around like you're messing with it, right? Yeah, you're now on the bridge of the Enterprise, right?
Sure.
I mean, these guys had devices that weren't that much. They were a little bit smaller than that, a little bit thinner, and they were always messing around with them, right? And I'm like, what could you This was my thought in 1994. What could you possibly do on that small of a device that could have any kind of meaning? I mean, they were figuring out quantum physics on those things, right? But they were controlling the ship with those things. And you think, you can't do that. Well, you know, what's our use case now? We can control some pretty powerful stuff. Just there.
Well, and I think it was Popular Science is the one. I think it's Popular Science magazine. I have a subscription to, and a few years ago they did a section on, you know, the tricorder. You know, the tricorder had all these sensors and all this analyzation. Well, they come to realize with an average phone, there's enough compute power that if on, say, the USB port of your Samsung phone, you put a sensor that was would pick up you know, the air around you, and literally there's enough compute power in there to do a full analysis of an air sample. So, you know, one of their ideas was, you know, back when we were a little more nervous about terrorist attacks with, you know, toxic gases and things like that, think of a big city of people walking around. If everybody's cell phone was picking up toxic or chemical or, you know, once again, I don't know if the use case is practical, but the compute performance functionality is literally there. The only thing that's missing is the sensor to pick it up.
It's kind of like the WEARS concept for air quality, right?
Right.
And your first, everybody becomes, and I think this is the power of these kinds of things, you know, still talking about glass, but these personal computing devices that the human is the best. I mean, we're everywhere, and so they're the best. If you want to know what's going on the fringe of something, or if there was ever going to be an attack like that, and these devices could pick up that kind of information and report, it really is the beginning of the Borg. I'm just going to say it. Right? this is all. Every time we have this conversation, I think we're going to be assimilated. You know, into the Borg, because those kind of things, wearable. Think about it. These wearable computing devices that have the power of them comes when they all are networked together. We were talking about these. We'll full circle back to the
God, to my networking class.
Way back to the beginning when we talked about.
So I have to do a Visio of the Borg network.
When we talked about these Nest thermostats and these Nest now smoke detectors, right? They mesh together in your house and start talking to each other. And imagine if your gas control in the house was also tied into the network, and as soon as the fire alarm goes off, the gas shuts off as well, right, to make sure the house doesn't explode, or it shuts all the power down, or it immediately starts backing things up and, you know, sending, it does an immediate backup and starts sending it to the cloud knowing it could die, you know, quickly. Those kinds of things. Imagine that kind of a mesh network where all these devices are aware of what's going on. And the same thing with people. Imagine big city, right? You got 4, 5, 6, 7 million inputs all coming, all meshed together, knowing what the atmospheric conditions are. That's pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing. And when you mentioned the Borg side of things, the first thing pops into my head, you know, what's one of the most common human ailments is diabetes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in any office, you probably see somebody pricking their finger and taking a blood test. There are several different slants on this, but locally here, and I don't think people like the context of it, but one of the first companies to invent the little implantable device for dogs and cats, so that if dogs and cats get lost, veterinary chip. Can scan the chip. Yep. Well, they quickly found that they were able to put sensors on that for glucose monitoring. So they're about 2 years into testing on it, but the idea is they'd put this tiny chip under your skin someplace, and that would be constantly measuring and monitoring your glucose, and it would report back into your phone or whatever device that would be, you know, real nearby you to pick up that kind of connection. So now instead of, you know, checking your glucose once in a while, you're constantly monitoring it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a guy, my family has a bit of irregular heartbeat kind of things that are sometimes tough to monitor. If they could just, you know, plant something in you that would allow your phone to gather up all that data, you know, it'd be great information if a doctor could look at a full 24 hours of your heart, you know, process. Right. So,
yeah. And so you got Fitbit on that does that, right? I mean,
yeah.
that device could easily monitor your heartbeat and report that to the phone. That's already happening for all your activity. It tells you how you're sleeping and how much activity you had and how many steps you took and how far you traveled. And yeah, there's some cool stuff with that. So, Rich, thanks for bringing up that whole idea of Google Glass. We went from a very negative outlook of it.
Where the heck are you guys, anyway?
Very positive view of the future. Rich, I've got to bring things in for a landing here. I've got to wrap stuff up and get rolling. Anything else you want to quick add before we roll on out of here?
I do. I want to say that watch out, Icon. I also have my multiple instances of SpinRite running in a virtual machine instances of SpinRite running on my Windows 2012 server. So,
very nice.
Yeah. Neener, huh?
And I don't think I'll ever do anything with them. I'll probably delete them, but I did it. So, yay.
You got it going. SpinRite's jumped into the conversation here in our group a couple times more recently. We were having a conversation on. By the way, if you are a member of our Facebook page, just recently we had Amanda jump in there and ask some questions about her brother's PC, which I found kind of interesting that she would jump in for him. But she jumped in, and we had a really good lengthy conversation about different things that can go wrong with your PC. It was actually what I had always envisioned the average guy home tech podcast would be about, was us helping, you know, the average computer problems, questions like. And so it was fun to see that kind of thing play out, and everybody was very, very kind to her in that process. And I think she actually got a few things figured out and got the problem solved by the time we were done. So it was about midnight when she came on, maybe it's like 11. She was up till 3 in the morning working on that PC, which we've all done, right? We've all done that as the family tech guys.
I'm just going to try one more thing, and then I'm going to bed.
I'm getting
nervous. Yeah, right. 2 hours later, you know, I thought of 4 other things while I was doing that, and then I had to look up. Oh, God.
I've been working on somebody's PC, and then while it's running.
There's no such thing as 5 minutes.
While it's running, I go to do something else, and I get caught up in that something else and realize that's been done for 25 minutes. I forgot to look at it, and so now you're like, oh, crap, I could have been done 25 minutes ago. So. Yeah. One of those kinds of deals where... So anyways, I appreciate you guys out there on the Facebook page doing what you do. It's always cool to see that those kinds of things come together. Rich's Random Podcast Generator is a podcast that we do. If this is the first time you've caught this on YouTube, it's a podcast that we do from time to time. Just kind of whenever we feel like putting a podcast together, Rich and I throw this out, usually on the weekends, and we don't have any regular time, although the last couple we've done in this 2 p.m. Central, 3 Eastern time slot, and that seems to work out real well, so... Maybe we've got a little bit of a formula there, Rich, and we invite very interesting guys like Kevin. Kevin, thanks for taking a few minutes to jump on with us. Hey, can I commit you to a Nest smoke detector podcast maybe the day after Christmas or the day after New Year? Are you going to be around?
Sure. Yeah, after New Year's we'll be around. Christmas I think we might be out, but
I'll touch base. Maybe that 2nd of January, that would be a Thursday during the regular home tech slot. Thinking about getting you and Gordon on to talk about these smoke detectors, because he'll have had one and have reviewed it too by that point. So
good,
be a good conversation. We'll shoot for January 2nd. How's that sound?
Okay, sounds good.
We'll shoot for that. And I'll remind you, like I do at the end of every show, lots of different ways to connect to this podcast. Again, first time if you listen to it, head out to theaverageguy.tv. There's lots of different ways to get involved in the podcast, iTunes, Xbox. By the way, the Xbox music has stepped up recently. If you haven't checked that out, go to Xbox. Music.xbox.com or something. Just Google Xbox Music. Their player on Windows 8 is dynamite, and you can listen to anything for free. It's crazy. It's insane what they are giving away through Xbox Music. So if you haven't, you'll need a Windows Live account to make that work, or a Microsoft ID account to get in. But you can pretty much create all your own music and get anything that you want. You can't download it and listen to it offline. That'll cost you $9.99 a month, but if you're on your PC, you can get anything you want for free. It's been pretty cool. But all that stuff's available through those marketplaces, and we'll be back with the next Rich's Random Podcast Generator whenever we want, because this is what we do. And or you can follow me on Twitter at Jay Collison. Oftentimes I'll tweet it out in advance, or on Google Plus, and join our Facebook group as well. Thanks for coming out, and thanks for listening. We'll do it again next time. See ya.